65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State. Here's your host, Kristen Bry.
Good afternoon. Happy Tuesday. And I was going through the show plan for today, and shockingly, big basketball show. Was not on purpose. Didn't set out to have a big basketball show the day after the NCAA tournament was done. But indeed, Ben Brust is going to join us at 1:45 to talk about the 2015 Wisconsin basketball reunion that's happening in June. I made the mistake that I guess he said happens to him a lot of people forgetting that he was on the 2014 team, which is the team that I did go to the Final Four that year in Dallas and saw him play. But he was not on the team that made it to the championship game in 2015. But he is hosting that event. He is moderating the event that's coming up in June. So he's going to join us to talk about that. And maybe if we have time, he and I can exchange some safe for work Bo Ryan stories, because there's plenty of them that are not safe for work. Then at 2:35, Joa Tucker is going to be here. So Joa was on the UWM basketball team 20 years ago that made it to the Panthers' first and only Sweet 16 run. He was also, my brother walked on that team, so he knows my brother. But he now has launched the Panther Future Fund, which is a modest NIL collective that is vital to giving UWM some kind of chance to continue to be competitive with this new world of the portal and NIL deals and the money that has been infused into college sports. So I'm looking forward to talking to Joa. Bobby Portis is back tonight, which everyone I'm sure is very excited about. I have a Bobby story that I was reminded of that I'm going to share. I'm going to see. I think it's a superstitious thing. And I don't know, because Rhea, you used to work for the Bucks.
Yep, used to dance, shake a leg.
And so I'm wondering if you know this thing that he and Brooke do.
Ooh, possibly.
Possibly. So we're going to talk about that later. And big news for Kristen Bry. Big news. Never happened before. In all the years of March Madness and NCAA tournaments and filling out brackets, and some years spending a lot of time on those brackets, never winning. Never have I won until now. I finally, so in my dad's side of the family, of which I think all in, there's 36 of us between aunts, uncles, my grandma, cousins, cousins' spouses, cousins' kids now, like there's a lot of us. And for over, 15, going on 15 years, we've been doing there's no money involved. There's no actual money involved, but we've all been doing a annual bracket, and I have never won that thing. I've gotten close. I have gotten the toilet bowl, because there's no money, but whoever loses gets their name on an actual lid to a toilet, and you get to hold on to the toilet for the year. And then the winner of the whole thing gets their name on a ball that also rotates winners' houses. And so I have been on the toilet bowl, and now I am also in that rare breed that will have their name both on the ball and the toilet bowl. But yeah, I was very excited. I don't care. I mean, I do care. It's fun. But what everyone's very excited about is that my brother didn't win. I got a text from my uncle this morning being like, I think everyone's pretty relieved that you pulled this one out and we didn't have to deal with your brother bragging about it all year, because he certainly would have. But yes, so if you also won your bracket, congratulations. It is, it's one of those things that's kind of a weird bragging rights, especially when you don't spend that much time on it, because there just is so much luck involved. But anyways, yeah, so another year of college basketball done, and we'll head into the NBA playoffs soon, and so yeah, there you go.
Go sports.
Go sports. Go sports ball. All right, but we have other things besides basketball to talk about today, and much more serious things to talk about than basketball today. So yesterday, this week it's been reported that nearly 300 students nationwide have been notified about their visas being canceled. And now, as of yesterday, You can add another 13 international students to that list who were or had attended UW-Madison. So the university released a statement yesterday that said, quote, as of Monday morning, April 7th, the terminations affect 6 current students and 7 alumni on employment extensions. A status termination generally means that an affected individual should depart the United States immediately. So when we come back, we are going to talk to Journal Sentinel higher education reporter Kelly Meyerhofer on what we know, what we don't know about these visa terminations and what it means for students who want to study here. So stay with us on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry, and yesterday it was announced that the Trump administration has revoked the student visas of 13 current or former University of Wisconsin-Madison students. And so here to talk through what we know so far is Kelly Meyerhofer, the higher education reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome back to the show, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I guess, what do we know why the Trump administration revoked the visas of these 13 people?
No, the UW has said that the reasons are unclear to them. I've reached out to the White House, which directed me to the State Department, which has not responded to my requests. But speaking broadly, what we're seeing nationally, you know, some of the students who have had their visa terminated has been related to their involvement in campus protests. But for a lot of others, it's because they were, you know, had minor like traffic or speeding violations, something like that, that sort of flagged them in the system.
Because you wrote about this morning. So the New York Times said as of yesterday, there was 300 students. So is this 13 part of that count?
It's unclear. I mean, you know, it's sort of, I was talking to someone and they said it's sort of like COVID, you know, where it's like, we don't know exactly how many cases because the numbers keep changing. I mean, just a few minutes ago, I got an email from the UW system and they, you know, I was asking other UW universities if they had any visas terminated for their students because, you know, they also have international students. And he says, we are aware of visa terminations other than those at UW-Madison, but they didn't have an immediate number or which campuses, you know. So it's just, it's a very fluid situation, and we're trying to figure it out.
So, because as of, there's 8,000 students at Madison that are on student visas?
There's 8,000 international students at Madison. They have the biggest international student population of any university in Wisconsin. But there are, I mean, UWM has, I think, a couple thousand international students. And I'm sure there's, you know, dozens or a couple hundred maybe at other universities.
So do we know anything about, besides the fact that there are 6 that are current students and 7 that were alumni that are on extensions, do we know anything else about these 13 people?
I don't. I mean, I'm still trying to report that out. It's tricky to report. A lot of them, you know, don't want to talk or like draw attention to their case. I did read this. The Guardian had a story that quoted a international student at UW-Madison who was going by a pseudonym in the story due to concerns she had about retaliation. Mm-hmm. And she said that she believes she was flagged because about a year ago she was driving home and got 2 speeding tickets, 1 for speeding and 1 for failing to stop. And so to get the charges dismissed, she showed up in court and she was fingerprinted there. And she thinks that's what led to her getting flagged in the system.
So what happens when a student's visa is terminated?
Yeah, I mean, the email from the State Department says, like, they must leave the U.S. and deport, self-deport immediately. You know, I mean, students, I guess, could stay, but then they risk arrest. Yeah. Nationally, there's been some students who have left. Others have not. It's sort of a case-by-case situation.
And is there legal recourse that students have? Are any students trying to hire lawyers and try to find a way to stay?
A lot of the students in these cases that have been written about nationally, you know, have lawyers, they're working with lawyers and they're trying to appeal that. I haven't gotten in touch with any of the UW students or their attorneys to see like what the specifics on their case and how they're planning to fight it, if they're planning to fight it at all.
So one of the things I was thinking about is, like we said, there's about 8,000 students who are international students at UW-Madison. A lot of universities rely, I don't know if, maybe you can tell me if you think rely is the right word to use, but the cost of tuition for an international student is very different than an in-state student. Is there, have you spoken to anyone who's concerned about, one, more students having their visas terminated for undefined reasons, or two, the deterrent this creates of international students wanting to study in the U.S.?
Yeah, a lot of international sort of education advocates have talked about how these deportations, you know, might sound like a small number, 300 nationally, when there's thousands, you know, of students at UW alone. It sounds like a small number, but you know, it can have a chilling effect. And I think one of the student newspapers at UW reported on a meeting where faculty were asking some, you know, academic officials about, like, well, are you concerned about, you know, our international student applications going down? I mean, this may deter students from even wanting to apply to study in the U.S., and that's what advocates fear. We saw that sort of during COVID, that, like, fewer international students, you know, wanted to move overseas and study here, and we could be facing the same sort of situation here under, you know, slightly different circumstances.
So as far as follow-ups for this story, what answers are you trying to get, or what do you think you can get?
I mean, I would love to, you know, talk to any of the students or their attorneys and get more specifics about why these students in particular were targeted and whether they're planning to fight it or they are hoping to stay here under the radar or go home. I think also, you know, just longer term, you know, like we were just talking about, looking at the international student populations at these universities, is there going to be a dip? I mean, that would certainly affect the university's bottom lines, but it would also just affect the campus community. You know, 8,000 students at UW-Madison it's a significant population, and if that were to shrink, it would change the dynamic on campus.
I mean, 8,000 students is as big as some liberal arts colleges. I mean, it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Kelly Meyerhofer, thank you so much for reporting on this and spending time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
She is the higher education reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry, and we were just talking to Kelly Meyerhofer, who is the higher education reporter for the Journal Sentinel, about the 13 international students, 6 who are current, 7 who are alumni, who are here on extension, so here legally, who got their visas revoked, and now with that are being asked to self-deport immediately. And I was reading this the other day from a journalist that I really like. He writes a newsletter and has an independent media outlet called Tangle, Isaac Saul. And he wrote a piece talking about how due process matters. And he used a very low stakes example from his personal life. But, you know, I've had similar things happen to me. When you get accused of being something or, you know, things that you've done, things that you've said that you haven't. And that in some kind of public forum on a Reddit thread or the internet, people start claiming things about you and how awful that feels. And the fact that especially when you have no way to fight back except say that, well, this is not true and you have to prove it. And how, you know, even in lower stakes like that, when you have nothing really at threat besides your reputation, it feels like it matters to be able to say the truth and be able to have your sometimes metaphorical day in court, but actually have your day in court. And I think about it with these visas being just revoked, and all of a sudden you think you're studying, you think that you're working towards a life, you think you're following the rules, and everything changes. And I certainly think about it in the news that we got yesterday from the Supreme Court when it comes to who got sent to El Salvador. And so I know we've been reporting it on the news, but Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration to restart deportations of Venezuelan migrants with alleged gang ties. So in a 5-4 decision, the court overturned a lower ruling that temporarily blocked the removals, but they did add a caveat. They basically said that detainees must be given due process. So that part is, you know, already under scrutiny. So one man that I think this is the guy who's probably gotten the most attention so far. I know Joe Specky on Political Power Hour on Friday had a pretty scathing monologue about this. But Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia was deported to El Salvador last month without ever seeing a judge, which immigration officials admitted was a, quote, administrative error. He had protected legal status and no criminal record, and now is being held in a notorious mega prison. And I don't know if you've seen some of the images that have come out, but it's bad. It's really bad. And so his lawyers have denied that he had any gang ties, and the Justice Department hasn't provided any evidence linking him to one. But the administration has signaled that they have no plans to bring him back, even as the Supreme Court debates whether they're required to. And so I just wanted to read the dissent from Justice Sotomayor from the decision yesterday, that I think even if you agree that it is up to the president and to decide who is and who is not here, this was the quote that she had in her dissent. The government takes the position that even when it makes a mistake, it cannot retrieve individuals from the Salvadorian prisons to which it has sent them. The implication of the government's position is that not only non-citizens, but also United States citizens could be taken off the streets, forced onto planes, and confined to foreign prisons with no opportunity for redress if judicial review is denied unlawfully before removal. So, is that where we're headed? I don't know, but certainly something to at least know when what's happening. All right, ABC News and local headlines are next.
Hey, it's time for Giving Tuesday, where we introduce you to Wisconsin people and organizations that are advocating for causes and doing good across the state. Well, when you think of college students, is that the group that you think of when you think of people who are struggling with food insecurity or, you know, having better access to nutritious meals? And so would it surprise you to find out that 47% of students deal with some sort of food insecurity? I guess when you really think about it, maybe it doesn't surprise you. But Kristen O'Brien is in her third year as a student at UW-Eau Claire, and she is the student director with the Student Office of Sustainability. And she is now piloting a project where she is seeking to reduce food insecurity for students at UW-Eau Claire. So she is joining us now on the phone. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So was this something that you knew going into school, or how did you even start to become aware that this is a problem?
So going into school, it's definitely something that you don't really think about until you're there. I've been lucky enough where it hasn't been a major issue for me, but when you're in college, in the residence halls, you're surrounded by people who come from all different walks of life, and you realize that this is an issue that a lot of people face. So I really, like you mentioned in the intro, just didn't realize how many people this affected, especially people in college, until I was here and started noticing the large group that it impacted.
So is it like the, because I now have to go back to thinking about college and when you're, you know, freshman in the dorms and like there's food plans, right? And is it that the food plans themselves are really expensive?
Not necessarily. It's more so just the accessibility of those food plans. Some campuses, I know some struggles that we have had is when the dining hall is open. Perhaps they aren't open very late at night where students are still at school or working if they have a job, and they also have very limited hours on the weekends. So it's really just if you are in the category of people where that doesn't work for you, you kind of are struggling and have to find your own way to get food.
Got it. And then, I mean, is there very many grocery stores or anything like that on campus?
Not very. Luckily, Eau Claire does have a bus system, so there's an option to utilize that. But right around the university is a bit of a food desert where we have one on-campus kind of shop called the Tea Store, where students are able to utilize their dining dollars to get groceries, which is a really nice, great opportunity. But that too has the same issues as our dining halls, where it has very limited hours. And so if that's not open and the dining hall is not open, students are left kind of stranded.
Got it. Okay. So you're piloting this food recovery program. How does it work?
So essentially, we're working on two right now. One of them is, we call it the food recovery program. And this is when our dining halls, when they cook more food than gets brought out to students in the cafeteria, they leave it in the refrigerators for us, a student intern, as well as a pool of volunteers who will then go repackage that food in compostable containers. And we will label it with what types of food, possible allergens. And then we will bring that down to our lower campus building where we have an on-campus food pantry called the Campus Harvest Food Pantry. So all those meals will be placed into those freezers, which can then be given to students for free, for those who choose to utilize the food pantry on campus.
Very cool. And so, how, and then what's the other program?
The other program is called Free Food Alert, which is very exciting. It is essentially a mobile app that allows people who work for universities to sign up as hosts, who can then, if they have a catered event where they put in the order for food, and after the event there's a bunch of leftover food, they can fill out a form explaining what food there is, where it is, how much, how long they'll be there, like 10, 15 minutes. And then they can send out a notification via email and push notification for anybody who has the app to all students who are signed up. Then all of this food from leftover catered events can then be given to students to eat or pack to bring up to their dorm to eat later instead of all of this food being thrown away. And so both of these programs do a really great job at one, giving students access to these free good foods and also reducing so much food waste possibilities that we have here on our college campus, but also all college campuses.
Well, and that's one of the things. I mean, I used to work in a company that there was free lunch every day. This was when I was working in Silicon Valley. And that's why I could never wrap my head around how much food waste there was. But aren't there certain rules as far as being able to, like, what health precautions do you have to do as far as being able to, safely repackage the food instead of, so often I think food just has to get thrown away because of health departments, right?
Oh, absolutely. So that's why, I mean, of course, we're a university, so the number one priority is the well-being of students. And so for our food recovery program, all the food that is repackaged has to be within a window of time where it was cooked. We also only take food that hadn't been introduced to the warmers where students like serve themselves the food. That we are not able to repackage. It is only the food that was prepared, cooked, but not given out to students at all. And so that is what we use. And then in the packaging methods, we go by like serve safe guidelines, making sure that everything is clean and safe and packaged correctly. And then when we give it to the food pantry, they are all put in freezers labeled with correct cooking
Instructions,
instructions.
yeah.
And so if they were to go bad, if they were to stay in the freezer beyond a certain period of time, we would then throw them away. But because this is something that there is such a need for, they have been flying off of the shelves in the food pantry and we haven't faced that issue yet. And with Free Food Alert, that is safe because it's just the last 10 to 15 minutes after an event, it is no different than people eating the food at the event. It is not dealing with any of the other like if it's been left out for a bunch of time, no, this is directly after an event, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And so I guess you just said it's flying off the shelves. And so what has the reaction been and the impact been?
Yeah, so because of this, since it's only been one pilot semester, we don't have a bunch of necessarily numerical data yet, but especially because our food pantry is also fully anonymous, students don't have to disclose any personal information, anything like that. But I can say that our food pantry has, I think it's about 500 individual users that use the food pantry. And every time that we have dropped off a load of these repackaged meals, like I said, we haven't had to throw away any yet.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a lull in packaging, like the freezers are empty. And I have gotten student feedback just talking about how much they love it, having these pre-packaged meals that they can just like stick in the oven, cook to a good internal temperature, and then eat has been super helpful and super nice. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was just going to wrap it up because this is a brilliant idea. It's super innovative, and I hope other universities are listening because it's very much feels like two birds with one stone as far as not throwing away a lot of food that could still go feed some more people. So, Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Kristen O'Brien is a third-year student at UW-Eau Claire, where she is piloting a food recovery program that sounds like it's pretty successful. So stay tuned. We'll have more with Ben Brust on the other side of this.
If you know of a Wisconsin organization you would like highlighted on Giving Tuesday, email us at spanning@wtmj.com. We can always use a little help from our
I said it was going to be a big basketball show, so here we go. I was already talking about I won my family bracket.
Oh, wow.
Ben, I'm very...
Did you have Florida?
I had Florida. I forgot the other big ones that... I think the big difference was Houston beating Duke, because I was saying that the fact that I won and my brother got second, and everyone, all my cousins and aunts and uncles are very happy that I won and my brother didn't, because we would react differently.
Yeah, I didn't do so well, and when I don't, I'm like, you know.
Have you won a pool before?
Yeah, so I won one in like 2016. One of our hosts of a sister station of ours, ESPN 1000 at Good Karma Brands, Mark Silverman, Sylvie. I got to know him growing up in the Chicagoland area, and his wife's mom, for some reason, because I knew their family, was like, hey, have Ben fill it out. And then I won the first year I filled it out for her, not for me.
Okay.
I didn't win mine. She won. And then every year the bracket comes out and I print one out and I'm like, send a picture. Here it is for grandma.
Nice.
Other than that, I stink at it.
Right? That's what's always funny to me is the people who know basketball the best in my life rarely ever win.
Yeah, because you watch it and you think like, oh, I've seen this team all year. They're going to be awesome in the tournament. And then it's one and done. That's the magic of the fun. Now,
it was the first time
since 2008 there was 4-1 seeds. So if you were very chalky, as they say, and just like the top seeds to win, you probably did well.
Yeah, absolutely.
My dad called me. He's like, I won. I had Florida and Houston. I'm like, I kind of like watch every game all season. I didn't get close to that. And so it's just crazy how that works.
I know. All right. Well, speaking of March Madness. It's been 11 years since you made it to the Final Four.
Correct.
It's been 10 years since the Badgers made it to the championship. And has the time just flown by, or does it still feel like yesterday?
Oh, it's now to the point where like it does start to feel a little bit further removed because of where all of my former teammates are in life, right? Like, I'm getting married in August, and the opportunity to have Frank Kaminsky, who was the National Player of the Year in 2015 and my teammate for 3 years, Josh Gosser, who was my roommate for 3 years and standing up at my wedding as well. Like, getting us all together in the bachelor party and for the wedding is going to be great. But we also came up with an idea here with our company to do something special for the 2015 team, because as much as I felt really proud to be a part of the foundation and get to the Final Four for the first time for Bo Ryan in 2014, the 15 team beat 38-0 Kentucky, lost to Duke in the title game. You could relive those moments of how the ball was touched by Justice Winslow's hand and they looked at a replay, still didn't call it the Badgers' way. All of that. The thing that's really interesting in the world of college basketball right now is it's really pay for play. It is. Like, there's no rules on it. And so there's a little bit of a lack of building relationships with the players as a fan, right? When you grew up watching the Badgers or your favorite team, somebody might come in as a freshman, maybe not play. Then they play a little bit as a sophomore and you get to know them. Then they make developments and play as a junior and then as a senior, and you kind of cover their story arc as a fan of the team.
Well, think about Frank, right?
Exactly.
Like, where Frank was as a freshman versus where he was when he
graduated.
He got
poked in the eyes his sophomore year, and he wore goggles and looked like a goof and then became the National Player of the Year.
Yeah.
So really the idea here is to get everyone together to celebrate the team, right? Yeah. And I know people love the on-court stories, but what people really seem to enjoy in 2015 for the Wisconsin Badgers is the off-the-court personalities. They were a really tight-knit group, carried that over from 14 and got even closer, and then there was success on the floor. So to get all of them in the same room, so we're going to do an event, Made Them Believe, because their mantra was Make Them Believe in 2015. And it's going to be at the Orpheum in Madison on June 26th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Nice.
So you can get your tickets. It's going to be a live event. I'll be hosting it with a lot of my former teammates, Josh Gosser, Sam Decker, Frank Kaminsky, Bo Ryan will be there.
Bo is going to come.
All right. And I got it on his paper calendar. I'm sure that he has in his home.
Kelly's taking care of it. Yes. You talked to Kelly, not Bo.
Talked to Bo and first. Yeah, I got to check with Kelly to make sure we're free, you know?
They won't be in Palm Springs. They'll be back in
Palm Springs. They'll be in Wisconsin. And that is UWHoops2015.com.
All right. Say it again.
UWHoops2015.com. $20.15 for your tickets.
Easy
peasy lemon squeezy. And look, as the host, my job is just to pull the stories that I know that people don't, that are appropriate, obviously, for everyone involved. Because if you love the personalities, you're going to love them even more, because I know what I can dig out of each and every single one of them to create a wonderful experience with some of your favorite Badgers of all time.
Well, we'll be there. My dad will absolutely want to be there. Give the website one more time.
UWHoops2015.com, the Orpheum in Madison on June 26th. It's a Thursday night.
All right. Well, Ben Russ, you have a show to go do, so I'm going to let you go. But and everyone listening can go listen to his show at 3 after they're done listening to my show.
There it is.
All right, Ben. Thank you so much. We'll be back with more after this.